So welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film, featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color. And today, we're talking about Advantageous.
Which is a 2015 indie sci-fi film that is available on Netflix.
Yes, it's on Netflix, so you don't have to search around. You can find it, and it's easy, and I love it, because so many times it's hard, but this is easy. I appreciated that so much.
Yes. I think, is this our first indie film that we are talking about? I think it very may well be.
Very may well be. Yes.
Hey. Let me say my weird things in my weird voice, okay?
That's fine. I can't think of any others. I don't want to commit to that statement, but I can't think of anything
else. I think this is the first indie film we're covering, yeah. I want to say that.
So what do you think about indie films?
I actually like, it's refreshing actually, from time to time. I appreciate a good indie film. I mean, again, being in the film program that I was in, where it was just like tons of experimental film, like, and it's like, sometimes it's like, okay, like different for the sake of being different, or it's like too much. But like, I almost kind of miss that, because we've been, you know, I've seen so many standard narrative films recently. I mean, like, what, the film we did before this was, what, Independence Day? It's like the exact antithetical, opposite, whatever, of whatever we just watched. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's so, so completely different. Heck, that wasn't even sci-fi, so, like, it just barely qualified. But this film, yeah, it was just, like, kind of a nice, refreshing change in pace from your usual narrative film, because it was, I mean, it was still a narrative film, but when you're an indie film, you have, like, certain conventions and artsy things, and I don't know. It was weird, because I kind of almost missed it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of nice to see weird stuff again. So this film, we have, like, the two, I guess, big leads of the film would be Gwen and her daughter Jules. The director is Jennifer Fang. So, like, lots of POC in this. We have a POC. I mean, and it looks like the writers are Jacqueline Kim, who played the lead role of Gwen, and Jennifer Fang. So, yeah, it's kind of cool that director, writer, and lead actors of color, like, all in one.
POC. POC everywhere.
Yes, and you only, I mean, I guess, like, this being an indie film, it's just much more easier to get all that stuff done. Mm. And one thing I didn't know about this film was they actually had a short, like, a film short version of it before, back in, like, I think 2012? Let's see. It was in Future States, which is a TV series, and I think there's actually some stuff I want to cover in there in the future when we do more podcast episodes. So there's a TV series called Future States, and they had a short film or a short episode called Advantageous in 2012 that was like the same character and the same like company and all that other stuff. And then they further expanded it into this like feature length film that was released in 2015.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is a very common route for, like, what, indie filmmakers to go. Like, they have a film, like, a short film, and then they're like, oh, like, I can turn this into, like, a much better, maybe fleshed out feature film, and they turn it into that, like, a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely seen this before.
I mean, I don't have anything against indie films.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch them that much, so I'm not as familiar with them, but
I mean, I'm no, like, indie film buff myself, but, like,
but I mean, I've enjoyed a few of them back in my day. I think I had less positive experience with this particular film.
I had some frustrations with this film, not gonna lie. But
I did not care for it. I mean,
I don't know. I guess, like, you just need to be in a certain mood to watch a moody indie flick. I mean, I feel like a lot of them are very, like, melancholy. Like, that's generally, that's what you go for. I feel like a lot of indie films have a melancholy tone, and, like, sometimes you just need to be in that mood to watch it, or else it's just not gonna work for you. But I don't know. I think I really liked, for me, just thinking overall, I really like the cinematography and the editing of it. Again, it's very, like, indie film conventions, but, like, I still kind of liked it and almost missed it. Because of all the stuff we've been seeing is pretty, like, normal TV film.
Right, very glossy.
Blockbustery, like, normal fare. But it's just something different. I mean, I think the ending was a lot weaker than the beginning. I had some other, and I think it's my biggest problem with this was there was a lot of periphery, it felt like very understated, a lot of periphery stuff was going on. That was interesting, but like we never really got any explanations for it. And like, I guess that's kind of the vibe it was going for, but like, sometimes I just wanted a little bit more explanation for things, you know?
Yeah.
It was very nebulous.
Everything was understated. Everything was just... Like, they brought up some interesting points, and some of the theming was really interesting, but, like, don't just tease me with it. You know, I want to dive into some of the meat of the matter.
Yeah, it felt like everything was, like, just really teased or, like, implied, or... So it was just like, oh, this could lead to something really interesting, and then, like, we just never got back to it, and, like... Yeah. And,
I mean... I was reading some reviews after I finished, and usually I don't like quoting reviews, especially on this podcast, because I'm like, I watched it. I have my own words for stuff. But there was one particular review which I just was like, this is everything. Mm-hmm. And it's from Slant Magazine, and this is the quote. Advantageous's visual effects are sophisticated for a low-budget film, and the acting is pleasantly realistic, but filmmaker Jennifer...
Fang?
I saw somewhere that it's pronounced Pung? Whatever, I'm sorry. Portrays this very near future like a universe of such quietness and sterility that it's difficult to care about its inhabitants. And I really like that because... Yes, it's so, I don't know, I wouldn't call it artsy for the sake of being artsy, because that's not right at all, but it's just...
It kind of goes under that umbrella a little bit.
It's, the characters aren't human to me at all. Mm. They're all just vehicles for the theme, and the theme is so... It doesn't come together in the way that it's, I think it's supposed to, at least for me specifically, that I, none of the pieces quite jive together. The characters were too flat for me to care about, and the plot wasn't interesting enough for me to kind of propel me forward. And I think part of it is that nothing really happens in this film.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the Netflix summary, it literally tells you everything that happens, and it is a sentence.
Yikes. You're not wrong there. Like, it's just, like, one event. Like, she decides to do the thing, and then she does the thing.
It takes her, essentially, like, an hour or something to decide to do the thing that we all knew that she was going to do. And even if you didn't look at the summary, that's how movies generally work.
I mean, look at the frickin' picture. I mean, yeah, what do we think is going to happen with the wires? But yeah.
I think that's the opening, too, as well. Like,
It does, like, a little in media res type of thing where...
Yeah.
I don't think... I didn't realize that that was a flash forward until later. but it was a flash forward.
Yeah. I don't know. I really appreciate some of the things that it kind of brought up about, like, women's beauty. And I really like the diverse cast, and I like how, like, the kids are getting set up for their future, and it's extremely competitive. And there was, like, this little kind of mention about how, well, not little, but how women are, in particular, are struggling, and they're starting to get pushed out of the workforce in favor of the men, which is something historically accurate. But it just doesn't...
Wasn't compelling for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To be completely honest, if we weren't talking about this and, like, somebody recommended that I watch this film, I don't think I would have made it past like 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. I think I was distracted by the pretty. Like, just, I feel like aesthetically this film was like everything.
Well, I mean, I think that sums us up pretty well. What we look for in film is very different, which is why we enjoy different things.
Well, I mean, but I totally get what you're saying, too. No, I wish there was more meat, like, story-wise.
I'll acknowledge that it's pretty.
it's extremely well shot. I mean, I mean, there's a lot, but I did try to pinpoint some, like, key scenes or things that I really enjoyed, but... Yeah, advantageous. It's just like, I don't know. I think my biggest letdown again was, again, it was kind of one of those films where I'm just like, I start off and I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And still by then, I was still like, I'm still not exactly sure what just happened. I mean, other than the fact that like the procedure happened and then more people are getting the procedure. Like, what? But it was just really the ending, I think, that kind of was a letdown for me. Because... I don't know. I kind of wanted something more, I guess, from the daughter or in the credits she just says Gwen 2.0 or from Gwen 2.0. Like, yeah. I just wanted more, and I didn't feel like complete at the end of the movie. I just felt like it kind of just ended.
Yeah, I agree.
So, because I was just thinking, like, after the procedure happened and things started to go bad, I was thinking, well, like, it can't end on a good note, but then, like, how are they going to end strong? Like, how are they going to end this? Like, they could either fade it off, which I wasn't really looking forward to, and they kind of did that, or there could be a thing that happened, but nothing happened. Further happened. So, I was just like, this is weird. But yeah, let me see.
Well,
let me look at the... Yeah, sorry.
Like, we were talking last night before we watched the film and when we were picking it out. And I was like, well, I don't really want to watch a depressing film just because I haven't been in a very good mood. And so I was like, okay. You know, when we watch this, I was ready to be, like, in, like, a dark space after I finish this, you know? Because I'm like, this is just a dark film. It's not going to end well. And so, like, the whole movie, I'm watching it, and I'm like, okay, nothing's really happened yet, but I'm ready for the darkness.
And it wasn't as dark as I thought it would be, I guess. I mean, like, we knew what was coming, but...
Right.
So it was dark, but it wasn't, like, devastating.
Like...
It wasn't, like, Children of Men levels of, like, sadness, like, you know?
The whole thing is watching Gwen... come to the realization that she has literally no choice, but she sort of does have a choice, but she doesn't have a choice to get this procedure done, even though she knows it's not going to end well. And I don't know. When it happens, and I think it does happen around an hour or so in, approximately, that's not quite right, I think. And I didn't write it down, but I kind of... expected it to go really dark, like where, you know, and it got darker, and they don't, in Gwen 2.0,
she's fighting her daughter and everything.
Gwen 2.0 kind of... and Jules aren't really connecting, and they're really, it's really sad, but I don't really care that much. And even what I guess what I would call the climax of the movie, when Jules hides the oxygen shots from Gwen 2.0, and you think...
Oh, yeah, I thought something was going to go down. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be it. And then, like, I don't know.
And then, I guess, you know, the resolution is that she's like, well, I guess I have to live with her, so... I don't know. I just expected one of them to kill the other one.
I that would be so dark, but then I was like, that would be something. You know?
I feel like I really that expected would be something. That. And, like, so when I finished the film, I wasn't in a dark space at all. Like, I finished, and, like, the ending isn't exactly upbeat. It just kind of ends. You mentioned that. I completely agree.
Yeah.
It doesn't really resolve anything.
Like, I don't know if they're trying to make it, like, happy-ish, because, like, oh, now her cousin and her cousin's husband are there and stuff. It was weird.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of stuff I wasn't sure, like, why, like, certain, like, I didn't understand why, like, just that one friend was there at the end. Like, what was she doing there? Other than to say her line about, let's do that spinning meditation thing. Like, that was weird.
Yeah.
And then I also had the same problem. Like, stuff was, like, put forth, and then we just never got back to it, which kind of annoys me as, like, a person who wants, like, a very concise, like, storytelling. Like, they had a whole thing with her phone, Gwen's phone call to her mother, and that's also, like, there was that weird girl with the mask on her face.
Yep.
And then, like, she never came back, and I was like, who is this girl? What was she doing there other to be really weird? Like, I don't understand.
There was a lot of stuff like that.
I almost thought that was, like, that was Jules, like, after she had been, like, changed or something. Because I felt like their faces were pretty similar. But then I was like, oh, wait, no, it's not Jules. And, like, who was that girl? What was her? Why was she giving significant looks to the camera? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know.
It was super weird.
I like when films hint at, like, a larger reality.
Yeah, there's a lot of hinting. There's a lot of hinting.
You have to ground the film somewhere.
And yeah, you gotta commit.
I feel that this film was grounded anywhere. And I do understand that they had a, you know, it's a small budget. It takes place in the future. That makes things hard. I do understand and I sympathize there. But it's not an excuse. It's not. It's so. It has such a tumultuous relationship with the outside world. It hints at the outside world, but I never really believe in it.
Yeah. I wasn't even sure where, I mean, because they were speaking in French at the beginning, I thought maybe they were in, like, Canada or something. Like, yeah, I had no idea where they were.
No.
And we didn't know when they were either. I mean, we could kind of take a gander, but, like, we didn't really know where or when or how or what or why. Like,
you didn't know anything.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of themes being thrown out there that I thought could have been cool to explore, but then, like, it was, like, there was too much stuff going, like, not too much stuff going on, because that's not true, but, like, there's too many themes being thrown around, and I feel like this film probably could have benefited from focusing on a smaller number of themes and really focusing on them, rather than kind of throwing it out there, like,
hey.
Child prostitution, unemployment, terrorism. Although I did think, like, the super, like, casual blasé reaction to, like, oh, not again, like, was, like, really interesting and sad. But, like, I don't know, kind of worked for me.
It needed but something, I think.
It needed a little more context, I think, yeah.
Like, why were people, I mean, I understand that the city that they're in is one that's extremely divided between the haves and the have-nots. I do understand that, but, like,
we don't even see them that much, though. We just got that one encounter with, like, what?
The there's girl in the
child
bush.
Who's in, like, the bushes. And then there's, like, when Fisher and Gwen are on the pier, like, we see some people, like, sleeping on benches or fishing, but, like, don't really get too much interplay with those people, so it kind of just kind of felt kind of flat, you know?
I don't believe that this is a possible world, or even, like, there's no...
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't happen like this. You can't just create without thinking of how it occurred. And it seems like the company controls a lot of the things, and...
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, unanswered questions, which makes it kind of a frustrating view, I guess. I mean, just going kind of chronologically through my own notes.
I wrote a lot of notes as I was watching, but none of them really made that much sense.
I mean, feel free to bring them up anyway. I mean, I know they start off with the black screen, and you hear people singing in French, and I was like, wow, these people have amazing French, better than I ever will speak French.
Well, it was better than your understanding is better than my understanding, because I was like, I don't know what language this is. It sounds like a romance language, but it's not Spanish.
Well, I knew it was French, but then, like, we didn't really get much from that. But speaking of, I know Jules mentions, oh, are you going to Paris again? And, like, we don't even really see too much of Gwen's, like, before being fired job life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even that would have been something.
Yeah.
But we don't really get any, like, we don't, I mean, we're told that she has this job, but then, like, we don't ever see her in job.
Yeah.
And we're told that she has all this expertise and we don't really see it. I mean, I have a lot of I like this shot notes in my in my notes, but like that first kind of shot. I mean, the classic, I feel like there's like certain indie film conventions that are very popular, like it's like just like the editing is very unconventional compared to it's very redundant saying this, but compared to a conventional film, the editing is very unconventional. But I think that's a very indie film thing to do, like draw attention to weird editing or stuff. Just like, I feel like slow-mo and like slight zoom-ins and like weird color grading are all like kind of hallmarks, but like I still dig it like a lot. But yeah, there's this great shot of all the buildings in the beginning. Let's see, anything else that I write about?
Like, they brought up the, even as early, I think it's one of the first scenes where the girls are playing this game, basically, of, like...
That was super weird. But then I liked it because it showed us, like, how weird childhood has gotten. But I was like, what is happening right now?
And it's like they're, like, trying to be... make sure that they're competitive. And, like... instead of working together, they're trying to, like, oh, you know, only one person can win. And that idea, I thought, considering it was brought up really early, and I just thought that that was going to be much more important, where, like, somebody has to lose if you win.
Because that's how it works, right? You set something up early on, and
then really you come back to it. I really be more important, especially with the trying to get into the schools and, you know... she doesn't get into the school that she wants, but then she gets into this other school and it's really good and, you know, make sure that she is elite, you know, essentially. But it doesn't... There was no culmination of that.
Yeah, like, it's not even that Gwen is, like, competing against any... I mean, she is, but, like, it's never, like, a thing we see or experience. It's more just, like, freaking, like, job AI just, like, shuts her down. Yeah. And it's, like, I don't even know why you're looking for a job. Like, bye. rude.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking the first guy, I think it's Fisher, right? Who talks to her in that little hologram thing. I don't know. I, like, really liked all the visuals in this film, except for, like, I thought, I know people like the cityscape scenes, but, like, I wasn't really liking it that much, honestly.
I didn't like, care some for of them. Just,
so, I mean, I just thought, again, it's an indie film, so... it's fine, but yeah, the quality wasn't like super great to me, but I really liked everything else. Like, I liked the holograms.
Those were pretty cool.
I liked the lighting and the color grading schemes and stuff. Like, but yeah, I thought, like, okay, Fisher was like, having him on the hologram sounded good and like was very, I felt like pretty human, but like, I felt like all the voices after that, like the ones that were on the phones or whatever, or at least the couple directly after her first meeting with Fisher, were just, like, really, like, artificial and, like, weird sounding. But then again, we found out one of them is, like, an AI, or maybe. So then that kind of explained it. But I was like, wow, like, people sound really cold and distant over this weird phone thing. Like, it's really...
yeah. Ugh.
But, like, that works as for a sci-fi dystopian thing.
Okay, so...
but...
I don't remember. I think around the time that we realized that the... that it's, like, Drake. An AI. Yeah, Drake.
Tell me you didn't think of the rapper. Like, please.
How can I say that I didn't think of the rapper? You know I did. Anyway, that's another point to your Canada setting.
That's what I'm saying, man. I thought this took place in Canada. I think I honestly thought this took place in Canada.
But, like, around that time, I had this theory that essentially everyone... almost everyone in this world was an AI. And because of the way that they talk...
we can neither confirm nor deny any of these allegations.
Like, I thought, like the other moms at the Eastern luncheon...
oh, they were so weird. I loved it. I love that. I
was like, oh, what if they're AIs? What if everyone here? And the whole thing is like, oh, you can donate... Gwen could donate... her eggs so that people could, you know, have their kids, right? And I was like, well, we do understand that there's, like, this hormonal thing going on, which doesn't really brought up again either. But yeah. I was like, well, what if the reason that some of them can't have kids is because they're AI? And I'm like, I have this whole thing.
But why wouldn't AI want to have a kid or a biological kid?
Well, how do you know they can have kids? Maybe they can't. Maybe, you know, they're not real, so they can't have kids.
We just got real Inception up in here. Like,
no, but this is what further. I was thinking as I was watching, because I was like, well, okay, so Drake is potentially an AI, so why can't all these other people be?
True.
There's nothing that's... He talks weirdly, but so does literally everybody else.
Right?
And I was like, that would be such an interesting twist.
I feel like Gwen is pretty human, and...
No, but I like...
Like, Fisher when he's at the docks, not when he's, like, at work.
Yeah. No, like, I felt like part of it was going to be, like, people had made themselves, like, basically AIs, some people, so that they could, you know, be young forever or whatever. And this is essentially...
How does one make themselves into an AI?
The same kind of, like, surgery, basically. Instead of being put into a twin or whatever, you're put into, like, an artificial body. And this whole thing was about the robot apocalypse.
It was all just a fever dream.
Obviously, I was wrong. But that would have been cool, okay?
That would have been cool, yeah. I don't know. I just, like, definitely, like, you get that whole cold, sterile feeling a lot through this film. I don't know. I guess it doesn't take much, but I was convinced by the mother-child relationship between Gwen and Jules, and I don't know. I like that, and I was a sap and cried and stuff, but like...
Oh, did you?
I know, I feel like that was very convincing to me. I liked their scenes together as mom and daughter. I thought it was very real.
I thought that was probably the most convincing part of the film for me.
Dang.
What?
But yeah, I just like... This film, like, you know, I'm just looking at my notes, and, you know, when that CEO-type woman for whatever the Center of Health, blah, 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 creepy organization.
She's an AI.
She's creepy as heck, and she was scary. I mean, and then she was like, she played the child card when talking to Gwen, and I was like, oh no, she did not just go there. Like,
she played Gwen like a violin, okay?
Right? I was like, girl, what? I wrote Claire ? And I can't remember why, when that was brought up. I think they mentioned some woman named Claire, but then, like, we never got back to that. A lot of things in this film we just never got back to. I wrote Drake is creepy AF. And then we found out he was an AI, and I was like, oh, that makes, like, complete sense. Because I was under the impression that he was a person, too. But then again, like, once he started getting really weird, and then, like, even Gwen was like, are you a human? And he's like, what does that defy? And I was like, okay, you need to step back.
It reminds me of, like, those robocalls that you sometimes get. Do you ever get those where, like, it sounds like a person talking to you, and then it's not?
I mean, I generally ignore robocalls, but yeah, certainly. And then I noticed a lot of online reviews I had read afterwards talking about the film were like, yeah, like, basically you have, it's like, it could be heavily implied or it could be construed that, like, there's a lot more, like, the reason why there's no jobs is because there's so many AIs doing jobs, and, like, the AIs are kind of, like, you know, feeling like humans are less superior or, like, you know, beneath them.
Yeah.
And, like, why bother helping them? And, like, leading to the leading to the whole, like, AI overthrow, robot apocalypse, whatever.
Yeah, I really thought they were going there, but they didn't.
It was just, like, one of those things that's, like, either heavily implied or whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah. There's so much stuff they could have explored more in depth, and I wish they did.
Yeah. I do like that, like, a lot of the problems that the characters faced, and by characters, I really only mean Gwen. maybe Jules to an extent, but especially in the beginning, it was very our world problems. Like, they basically took problems that a regular person would have in this day and age and just cranked them up to 11 and was like, go experience life and it will be painful. And I don't know why I did that voice, but that's I mean, you know, the competition, you know, the tuition, the, you know, even the terrorism and the other stuff. It just, I don't know.
You know, I have, like, the competition thing really resonated with me. Like, when the, like, when Jules is talking about how, like, she needs to be, like, better, smarter, prettier, and do more community service, and do more activities, and do this and this. And I was like, dang, you know, like, I've literally had that same thought. But then I was, like, thinking, like, kind of horrified afterwards, like, I mean, what, like, in a hyper-competitive environment, like, what are kids even after that? Like, they're just, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not even, like, you're just doing it for the sake of being competitive. You're not doing sports because you enjoy them. You're not doing music because you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I completely that, understand. And I agree. That part was, I sympathized. And it was, 'cause
I've had thoughts like that. And then I'm like, wait, that's,
yeah.
It's kind of gross.
I just wish it had kind of come to a head a little more.
Yeah.
Especially later on in the film. Because, like, she's wondering, you know, what's the point, basically. And
her Gwen's answer was more compelling than Gwen 2.0's answer.
Yeah.
Let's put it that
way. I'll second that. But that question was almost just a way for Gwen 2.0 to, you know, get back in touch with Jules. You know, kind of through the film's lens, but through the, like, the actual let's think about this question as a higher question lens, it wasn't really answered to my satisfaction.
No, it really wasn't. Again, a lot of stuff happened that I was like, I don't know why this is happening or what the point of this is, but, like, visually it looks really cool. Like, they got very much into, like, kind of horror kind of genres with, like, the lighting at times. But I loved it. It was so, like the lack of lighting in certain scenes just really worked. Like, when she's waiting at the restaurant, when she goes into that creepy, like, hotel, not hotel place. And just, oh, it was so good. But then I was, like, confused. Like, I was like, what's she doing in this hotel place to sleep or, like, cry or what? Like, and then, like, what's going on with Jules? Like, is Jules going to be like, hey, my mom's not home, like, tonight? Like, what's happening? It's never explained.
Yeah, I don't know where. Yeah, I don't know where she was going. I just don't get that. And then she goes to pick Jules up from piano practice, I think, is, like, the next scene we get of her. And so it's not like a night thing, unless that was, I don't know.
It was weird. And then, like, I don't know, I think Jacqueline Kim did a great job acting-wise for Gwen.
I agree.
I know other people were like, oh, it was, like, too understated or whatever, but, like, honestly, I think she brought a lot of raw emotion to the film. Mm-hmm. And, like, can we just say, like, the girl playing Jules, I think her name is Samantha mm-hmm. Kim, not related to Jacqueline Kim, she was amazing. Like,
She was
so good.
I found the acting quite good, and I feel like indie films can kind of be hit or miss for acting. Sometimes, like, they're really over, sometimes they're kind of under, but this I thought was kind of right on point for what the feel of the film was, even though I don't necessarily agree with the feel of the film. The acting definitely matched it, and it never felt out of place for me.
Unexpected Ken Jeong, right?
Well, I mean, I looked at the Wikipedia article before, so I did know to expect him, but, you know,
well, I saw him in the credits, but then I was like, when we finally saw him, I was still kind of, like, taken aback, because I was like, oh, it's Ken, but, like, and in a not comedic context.
Yeah, it's a weird context to see him in, one, but two, it's so far through the film that he actually makes an appearance that you're like, I have completely forgotten that I was supposed to expect you.
Right, exactly.
So even though I knew he was there, like, I still was like, oh yeah. Hey,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've ever seen him in a serious, like, role.
He's done more serious stuff. He's, like, trying to not be super typecast as, like, a comedy guy. He has, like, the chops to do dramatic stuff. But, I guess he is more well-known for his comedy-ish. I love that. So, again, more visual stuff. My main praise for this film was, like, the visuals, honestly. Mm. Like, when that helicopter is sweeping the lights through the apartment, and Gwen is just sitting up, and it's, like, all these purples and blacks. It was just like, oh, this is so beautiful. And then, you know, that scene with the three women sitting in the chairs in that weird, weird space, and then one of them has, like, that weird sci-fi stuff on her head, and Gwen just, like, walking to them. Like, that was, that is, like,
that is
so, like, it's, like, so indie film, and, or not, not indie film even, but it's just so, like.
It felt like a music video, actually.
Yeah, like, I almost kind of thought of one of Beyonce's music videos, but it was just, like, I don't know what's happening, but I like it. It just looked really cool. The colors and just, like, how they were dressed, everything was just, I was living. But then, and I think the small touches in that film, in that part, I really liked, like the kind of red under Gwen's eyes and, like that one woman who looked really sick and like unpolished compared to the other two, and then she like leaves and comes again. We never really understand what happened with her either, but like, I mean, again, aesthetically, I was like, oh, there's a lot of stuff going on here, and just like,
when
I think, yeah, you can keep. I'm just like going through my notes chronologically and again talking about like visually cool stuff that I liked.
When the woman in the Eastern lunch, you know, had to leave because she was, like, coughing and whatever.
Yeah, and then those other women were just like,
Yeah. I thought that maybe she had done some kind of intense cosmetic surgery or something.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah.
It felt like that. And then,
because she, I mean,
but then Gwen Duwell looks like sense.
Crap. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense when, like, I look back because, in context, they were all really interested in, like, oh, and then Gwen, they're really interested in Gwen's procedure, one, and two, Gwen seemed to be basically the first person who'd done it.
Like, of her own volition and not died.
Basically, yeah. So, she can't have done it, but it was really weird to kind of introduce something like that.
Which, yeah, I had that same idea.
Symptoms of Gwen 2.0's condition, and then just not even touch on it again.
Because she looked much different from the other two women. Because she looked sickly. Her hair was all messed up. Her, like, face wasn't, like, she looked pale and, like, not. She did look sick. So I was just like, what's happening? And, like, clearly the other women are judging her, like, a ton for whatever's going on. But we have no idea what that is. And then That one woman with, I think she's the one that has, like, the crazy headpiece, eyeglass, whatever thing on, and she takes it off. She was great with, like, the condescending, like, act. It was so good. Yeah. It was so good. But, yeah, again, like, I just like the small touches. Like, again, like, just, like, that kind of red under Gwen's eyes. Like, she hasn't slept or is, like, you know, feels horrible or anything. Again, I'm just going through chronologically scenes, like, so I think after this, she calls her mother, and she's in that, like, weirdly beautiful, like, wooded area, and then we get the girl with the silver mask that's, like, slowly walking towards her, and we have no idea what that's all about.
Yeah.
But, like, I love the way the trees were looking. I was like, what's with the mask? And then we never got an explanation.
Yeah. One thing, which we kind of touched on, in terms of, like, big ideas, which was, like, Jules not knowing why she was alive, and then she says, there's so much to do, which I really liked that kind of contradiction there, which, you know, kind of ties back to what we were talking about, like, oh, there's so much to do, and, you know, I want to go to piano practice and sports and blah, 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 so we can become more competitive, blah, blah, blah,
But for what? You're being competitive for what?
And the idea of, like, the contradiction between I don't know why I'm alive, and then you say there's so much to do, which is in fact a reason to be alive. And yet this, if you don't feel anything towards it, then it's not really.
Yeah. You're not doing it for the sake of enjoyment. You're just doing it to get ahead. But then you're getting ahead, but then, like, to get a job and to live and to, but then again, like, if that's all there is, not much of a life, is it?
No, it's just, I did touch on this before, but I'm just looking kind of through my notes right here, and it was really hard for me to watch pieces of the film because, you know, we knew so little about it.
Yeah.
We were, like, on this little island that, like, you got occasionally, like, little hints about the outside world. Call them waves, if you will. But just the world in which we were, you know, just dropped into was so remote. And there weren't many characters. Like,
yeah,
we didn't get, like, scenes of, like, people. I don't
There needed to be more context, honestly.
Yeah, we don't get what this world is really like. And, you know, we get, like, these little tiny scenes of a few people, but without any depth.
I think we're supposed to, like, extrapolate that this is just, like, a worse version of our current day reality.
But
like, that's, like, not to, it's not enough to just, like, extrapolate. Like, there has to be something.
It doesn't look like our world, and it doesn't feel like our world. Yes, there are certain problems which connect them, but, like, this kind of pointlessness that everyone seems to be walking through life with is so antithetical to a lot of the ways that people live their life today. Even people who are in, you know, really horrid conditions aren't this bleak.
Yeah, I almost thought we were going in for another Children of Men style film, which, like, I guess, like, the bleakness is there, but, like, the storylines or, like, the world building isn't quite there.
It's like, I don't, even in Children of Men, where I kind of didn't care about a lot of characters, I still kind of cared about the world that it created and the future. And, you know, there were moments, there were kind of flashes of brilliance where, you know, we found out that, okay, people can't have children anymore. How is this going to affect the world? And, you know, they kind of...
Yeah, they talk about, you know, infertility in the beginning of this film, and I kind of was going, oh, Children of Men!
Yeah, exactly.
But then, like, we never, and then we got explosions, but, like, it was never as, you know, intense or personal as it was in Children of Men.
Yeah, I mean, and I liked in this particular case that they were like, oh, we're going to do it kind of from a more female perspective. It's mostly, you know, women characters in this film. And I was like, okay, so we're going to kind of get more into that. And, you know, she gets the idea of she could donate her eggs.
Right.
And,
you know, but then it's too, that's too late because she needs the money now or something.
Yeah.
It was like, again, lots of weird stuff that we, like, was thrown out and then we just never got back to it. And it was like, what? Also, speaking of which, after she transforms into Gwen 2.0, like, isn't she, she's supposed to be the spokeswoman. Like, what happened with that? Like, she's too sick. She's like, looks like she's dying. Like, what's going on? We didn't even get her job that much in the beginning of the film either, so it's, like, weird.
She is, it just seems like, so she's a spokeswoman for this company, and, like, I don't really understand that either, because,
like why?
Why, yeah, exactly, why is she, and how did she get this? And no offense, but, like, she's, like, one of the older people that we've seen in the film, so why haven't they done anything about that until now? And, like, obviously they transport her from an Asian body to a white body, but that was, like, literally never brought up. And, like, I
understand. I mean, kind of.
I mean, it was brought up vaguely in that, like, oh, yeah, and she'll be beautiful. And, you know, it's probably, maybe it's more aesthetically pleasing in this world, but I don't know. I wanted something more, like, concrete.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of, fun fact, which I looked up, and I kind of laughed a little bit at this. The woman who plays Gwen 2.0, her name is Freya Adams, and she appeared in Kalhonaho.
Oh.
As a cameo. I don't know if she's, like, that random white child at the end of the movie, but, like, that totally might have been her. But she has a cameo in Kalhonaho for some reason. Then again, they did shoot that in New York, so, I mean, just could have been, like, a random extra or something. But I thought it was so wild, because, like, I was like, oh, like, so technically I've seen you before, but, like, this is your first, like, big thing, I guess. Let's see. Anything else?
I don't know. You said something that I wanted to argue about, but I can't remember.
I don't know. We'll probably circle back to it, honestly. I wrote... having this woman silently watching, I think that might have been talking about that woman on the pier who was fishing, mm-hmm. who was just kind of watching them. I was like, man, I want to know more about this lady. But then, again, never got back to her. The colors in this film were so weird, but I liked it. Like, the colors at the dock are so strange. But, I enjoyed it. It, like, gave it a kind of surreal kind of feel. Definitely got, like, Big Brother with the zooming in on his, like, old mouth and trying to figure out what he was saying. And, again, that woman, like, I think her name is Issa or Issa, but I don't really hear. Oh, Issa Crier, because I think Fisher does call her Miss Crier. Like, I love how, like, Miss Crier's just, like, watching them, like, the biggest creep ever. It was giving me, there's this film I watched in class back in college called The Conversation. I don't think I ever finished it, but it's pretty, like, it was pretty famous. It won some awards back in the day. And it's all about this dude who, he's, like, into wiretapping, or I think he worked for the government and did wiretapping stuff, so he's, like, spying on people. And, like, the whole thing with, like, that kind of garbled sound and them zooming in on the mouth was, like, giving me, like, a lot of, like, The Conversation vibes. Like, it was very much that film. And apparently there was a lot of other references to other films that I wasn't aware of that happened in Advantageous, but, man, like, The Conversation, like, that vibe was so strong, like, during the pier scene.
Just to kind of circle back for, like, a quick sec.
I know, I'm just going chronological, so you do your thing.
I found, like, the school pieces of it really among the more compelling pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and it's just, there was never any payoff, I guess.
Yeah. Because,
like, I wrote down this line. I can't remember exactly who says it, but it said, it's the only time in your daughter's life where her choices will make a difference, which is, I think, mm-hmm. convincing Gwen to make sure that she goes, that Jules goes to this, you know, elite school. And, like, why now? Why is it most important, like, right now? Like, I understand that this is kind of, you know, setting you up for the future, but maybe it's already over. Maybe it happened in elementary school and you didn't get into the right school then and it's all over.
I just... If they could further explore that,
Like, it didn't feel like this film followed its convictions to the logical conclusion. So, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how old these kids are. I'm really bad at estimating kids' ages.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how old she was either. I think I saw a review that was saying she was, like, probably 12-ish.
I was thinking, yeah, like, preteen, like, 11, something like that.
But again, it's so weird because they're speaking so formally in the beginning of the film. Yeah. And it's like, what?
Yeah, but, like, that was never really touched on again. Like,
yeah. I could have done with more interaction with those girls or something.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Mean...
You
kind of open on their interactions, and we never really get back to them in any significant manner. We don't really understand. We don't see whether the Eastern school and all the sacrifices that Gwen made is even worth it.
Worth it, yeah.
We don't see, you know,
yeah.
anything like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I can sense your frustration through the screen, through the internet.
The way that I described this film when I finished was that this is a really good first draft, which kind of sounds condescending. I understand.
It's also kind of worse because this is actually a second draft.
True. But, like, it feels like a really good first draft. Like, first draft is you're getting all your ideas out there and you're thinking, oh, okay, you know, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but let me throw some of the themes that I might be interested in pursuing further and pick the ones that I really want to dive into and kind of make the meat of the matter. And it just, nothing kind of coalesced.
Stuck?
Yeah, the way that it was supposed to. I found the dialogue kind of weird and wooden. I understand that, like, that was with purpose. Like, I understand. But it didn't help me connect with these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I think I kind of stopped taking notes after, like, when 2.0 came, because I was just way less invested in her. But I have some notes about, like, Gwen and how she's dressed and stuff. So, like, I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of her dresses are, like, super wrinkled.
I did notice that, but I didn't know if I was just being a jerk.
No, you're not being a jerk. Like, when... No, that's, like, definitely... I think I was looking at a review, and it was talking about how, like, trying to smooth out the wrinkles in her life. And I was like, oh. Which it could also be construed that way. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I was like, oh, some weird, like, futuristic fashion weirdness. Like, I was digging it. I was like, wardrobe, you did good. But then she when they're, like, it's before the Christmas scene. It's, like, they're shopping and, like, trying on new clothes. Like, she's wearing this weird pink shirt with, like, ruffles on it. And I was like, whoa, that's, like, so vastly different from everything else she's been wearing. Mm. What is going on? And then also, when she's at the restaurant, she's wearing this white shirt, a very, like, pleated... not pleated, sorry. A very, like, it's, like, a pressed white shirt with, like, a bow thing on top. And I was like, oh, that's weird how it's kind of... I guess because she's made this decision now, so it's maybe it's, like, a shift in her thinking has kind of changed. Mm. It's kind of reflected in her clothing. And then even... It's funny because Gwen 2.0 comes to the restaurant later with that same shirt on. And I was like, oh, I see you. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Interesting. Anything else that I wrote about?
Well, one thing that I did mention this a little bit before. But, like, they keep saying, oh, it's really difficult for women. And it's really a woman-focused film. But I was wondering, like, what is going on for all of the guys? And I noticed that Gwen's cousin and her husband have two boys. And I was wondering, like, oh, how does that affect things? Are they extremely competitive?
Yeah, they seem significantly less stressed out.
Right. But I do like that the idea that women are starting to get pushed out of the workforce. And, like, they should return to the home, and that, you know, that idea is safer than putting millions of desperate men out of work, which is a theme that's kind of been prevalent, you know, in recent history. The example that I kept thinking about was after World War II, and there's this idea that all these American women, you know, who were doing, you know, good work while... most of the American men were overseas fighting in the military. And
just told to go back into the home.
Right. There's this idea that, oh, you know, the war's over, and now it's time for all the women to go back home, and everyone was all hunky-dory, and this is awesome. But that's basically propaganda, and that's not how it happened at all. And people, you know, the women were really forced out of the jobs that they had been working on, you know, quite successfully. So, you know, the returning soldiers would be able to have a job because the military or the government feared the returning soldiers a lot more than they feared the current women workers.
Yeah. And there wasn't even like, again, weren't they just kind of implying, oh, if we had like tons of men on the street instead of women, it would be violent and horrible and blah.
Yeah.
And unsafe and et cetera.
But I don't really know what they were saying.
Again, like, they just kind of dropped hints and then never really followed through. I mean, it was just... But you definitely get that whole sense of, like, how women are, like... Again, I'm kind of taking a lot of words from, like, articles I read, because I was still trying to process what was going on. I was like, I need to see what other people are saying to kind of wrap my head around it. But, like, quote-unquote commodified. When women were commodified and kind of, like... Just, like, this whole idea, it's, like, they're either housewives or, like, prostitutes or something.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't give you much options, which, again, I can see why Gwen is super concerned for Jules' well-being.
But then, like...
I'm not saying that makes sense, no, but...
And, like, even, you know, essentially, I don't want to make false equivalencies, but Gwen essentially prostitutes out herself. Not... in a sexual manner, but her, you know, she sells her body. And all this is so Jules can go to school, and so she won't have to become like this, but that just makes her, you know, Jules another cog in the system, and I don't see why that is going to make Jules's life any better.
Yeah, the problem's institutional.
Right. And so, like, so, okay, so she goes to an elite school, blah, 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 and, you know, this will never be a problem again, apparently, because now her life is super made. But she's just, nothing is happening. She's just letting Jules become, you know, exactly like Gwen.
Well, I think Lily said it best. You pick, like, the worst possible options. Like, why do you do this? And then Gwen's just like, that's what I do. I screw everything up. Which is horrible, but, like, also true. Like, she's not wrong.
Yeah. I mean...
That same thing, like, isn't it, like, hypocritical? Because she's saying, like, don't change your appearance. But, like, what is she doing?
Right, she's selling every important thing. And everything that Jules... The only thing that Jules likes, really... in this world, and, you know, like, her connection.
Yeah.
I don't know. I understand that, like, Gwen is, like, a flawed character, but it kind of feels a little strange that she is prioritizing, you know, Jules's induction into the system.
Yeah.
So highly. And I don't understand why, like, they can't just run away. I mean, like, I understand.
But it's a dystopia!
But, like, this city can't be, like, the only city. And I maybe...
Yeah, we never even hear about the outside or other... I mean, we hear about Paris for, like, 2 seconds, but, like...
I mean, how can the whole world be like this? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And then it's, like... I was just, like, again, it's, like, one of those, like, casually dystopian things. Just dystopian things. title. But it's, like, that whole scene where she's, like, her mom's, like, oh, what would you change about yourself? And she's, like, she, like, rattles off a list and's, like, yeah, we did this in school. And it's just, like, oh, that is heartbreaking and
that's
horrible.
Cold, yeah.
But, like, also, it was, like, I wanted more stuff like that. Yeah. Even just more direct stuff would have been nice. But,
yeah,
like, dang, that kind of hit a note for me. And then, we never really got much more about, Gwen's relationship with her mom, like, we kind of got bits and pieces of it in that phone call, but then, like, what I liked was, like, on that, like, that list she puts on the fridge of, like, important contact information, like, she writes her mom's name down last and puts in parentheses grandmother. Like, I feel like that tells you a lot, but again, I wish we could have explored it. Like, clearly Jules doesn't know that, she doesn't know anything about her grandmother if she has to put the name and parentheses grandmother. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that hinted at a much larger thing that could have been interesting to explore, but was... I feel like I'm saying this a lot. Could have been interesting to explore, but was never explored.
Yeah. This film, for me, had two revelations, quote-unquote. Like, you know, like, we talked about how, like, nothing happens. And... That,
it's very much drama.
Yeah. But there's two revelations in my mind. One is that Jules's father was her cousin.
Ken Jeong!
Yeah. Was her cousin's husband. And that one, I don't know, that one kind of rung more true for me than the other revelation, which was that Gwen 2.0 is, you know, Gwen's twin who kills off Gwen 1.0. Like, that whole thing was played as a revelation to me because, like, we lose...
Wait, was it?
Okay, because, like, they specifically cut out the conversation between Gwen and Fisher, remember, on
right.
the dock. And then you...
Right.
And then, you know, when Gwen 2.0 is taken back there by Fisher, you get the other piece of the conversation. We, as the audience, don't know that Gwen 1.0 has to die, essentially.
Yeah, she essentially killed herself, yeah.
Right. We, as the audience, don't know that. And then as soon as Gwen 2.0 realizes this, we get all these flashbacks where everything is supposed to be different now that we've gotten this revelation, basically.
It didn't feel like a revelation to me.
No, that's exactly my point.
I think we all kind of knew she wasn't going to come back. Like, come on.
Like, the whole thing that, this is her twin, and, like, basically this is a completely new person. Like, we lost Gwen 2.0. She is dead. she killed herself. And, like, to me, that was played as supposed to be a revelation because that conversation was specifically cut out of Gwen's memory and because of all the flashbacks that were shown directly
after. Oh, sure. It was supposed to be some kind of turning point, but I just didn't feel like, it was very, okay.
Right, because I think we all kind of assumed it. I think it would have been a lot better if it wasn't played that way. And I
So not played as a revelation.
Right. And I, like, it's okay that Gwen 2.0 didn't know that, I guess. But, like, it didn't.
But now she knows it, so what's the point?
It didn't matter. And she learns it immediately. And then Jules figures it out, like, instantaneously.
Jules figured it out before she had the revelation.
Yeah. So
she was like, she said before she went to the doc that, like, you basically killed my mother. Like, she literally says that.
I just don't think that that particular piece of it should have been played in that way. I think that should have just been something that they talked about up front, and there's no need for it to be secretive because we all kind of inferred it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I like the doc scene because it was very, like, French Nouveau, standing in front of some waves and piers and being moody, and I was like, again, aesthetically, I'm living for it, but, like, story-wise, I get the frustration. I just kept thinking, like, just practically, right? Like, where are they getting these bodies?
Right.
What happens to the original body? Are they gonna just, like, bury it or burn it or just discard it? And then I felt like the whole thing with her going up in front of everyone and saying it was a completely seamless presentation and everything's fine. And I was like, well, it's clearly a lie. Sci-fi land, right? But, like, come on. Like, is she going to try to fight the system? Like, look at all these other people doing this, basically killing their old selves. Like, it's just much more horrific that I feel like it gave it credit for. And I was like, can we explore this, please? And not just kind of brush it off. Like, she did this out of desperation. And, like, as much as, like, you know, Jules is like, people are either greedy or desperate. And I was like, wow, this girl knows what's up. But, like, seriously, like, everyone's just kind of okay. She's just kind of okay with this. And, like, again, what happened to the person who was previously inhabiting that body? Like, what's that all about? Come on.
Right. Like,
the ethics of everything is just, like,
Yeah, there was not very good sci-fi film in the early 2000s called The Island, which I only watched because Ewan McGregor was the main actor in it, and I held a candle for Ewan McGregor. I might still, but that's up for debate. He's kind of older now. But the point, I think Scarlett Johansson was in it too. I can't remember. Anyway.
The Island, okay.
And it was about how essentially these rich people are growing or are paying for this company to grow another version of themselves, like a clone. So if something in their own body fails, they can just steal the clones. Now, this isn't sold to these rich people that way. They think it's just kind of like an artificial, like it's not a human that they're creating, you know?
But it totally is.
But that's the thing. Like, Ewan McGregor plays this clone, essentially, and they don't know that they're clones. And then, you know, then he meets his original and blah, blah, blah. It's not a good movie. I don't recommend it.
To flash way back to our very first episode, you may remember in our very first Into the Badlands episode, I mentioned a book called House of Scorpion or The House of Scorpion.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's plural or not. I still don't know. I should know. By Nancy Farmer. And again, I mentioned way back then that there was an excellent book I read as a kid. It's like a YA book, and it was like a similar concept. Like, there's this drug lord who just kept making more clones of himself, but they were, like, basically, like, boys, and they would just, like, kill and harvest them for, like, organs and stuff so he could, like, live on forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a story of how one figures it out and tries to, you know, do something about it instead of just dying. But, yeah, so you're saying The Island.
Right. So, I mean, it's, in that particular case, the second version It clearly comes out through the film that this is an immoral thing. That, the, you know, these clones have feelings and lives, and this...
Well, anytime you mention stuff about clones or bodies,
but
I think we all know how that's going to end up.
But in this particular case, like, the body that Gwen 2.0 possesses, like... I thought, oh, maybe they could go down that route. Like, oh, this used to be a person. It was, like, a really poor person who got, like, a lot of money to sell off her body so she could provide for her family or something. But no, it just seems to be, like, an artificial...
Oh, some kind of, like, reverse thing or flip thing? That would have been cool.
Yeah, no. They didn't do that. So...
That would have been cool, though.
No, I think it would have been cool. It just... They definitely wouldn't do that.
That's
really interesting.
It's too complicated. It's too much stuff. And you have to set it up earlier, too.
Yeah. But, like, you know, I feel like Gwen 2.0 is an artificial body, I guess. And.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just kind of in the same headspace as Jules, I feel like, when she came back.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I was just like, I was immediately on, like, I don't like her. She's not Gwen. And I'm not going to trust. Like, what she does or says. So, like, I'm already, like, in that mind space with Jules being like, well, of course I'm not surprised that she's a completely different person because, like, why would I be?
Right.
You know? So, like, I really feel for Jules in that moment because that's, like, horrible. Like, your mother's been replaced by this completely different person. Like, it's terrifying.
It is.
Yeah.
Like I said, I thought that this was going to fall into a horror ending, but it did not.
Well, I didn't want anyone to die. I didn't want a horror ending. I just wanted, like, I don't know what I wanted
from this
film.
It just felt inevitable to me that it was one of them was gonna have to kill the other. Neither can live.
I guess, like, again,
survives.
I don't feel like there was no change in, like, society. So then it felt really futile. Like, what is the point?
Like,
why are you still alive, Jules? Like, why are you still alive? Like. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
We don't get any... I guess it's that's you know, blockbuster thing where one person can change the world. Like, I'm not saying, like... But, like, some kind of systematic change. Like, something starting, you know? Because
yeah.
I can't believe she's just okay with, like, letting this happen. I can't believe Jules / Gwen 2.0 are just okay with, like, let's, like, keep having people... Like, I don't... I guess I was expecting some kind of thing where people would be like, oh, the procedure isn't how I wanted it to be. Like... I know they're signing legal documents, but please, like, people are going to complain anyway. Like, I thought there was going to be something, like, oh, the procedure's not turning out, like, the way people thought they would, and there'd be some kind of regret or some kind of situation, but I don't know, just something.
I mean, I feel like that was hinted at, that that has to be coming, but they just never really did anything about it.
Yeah,
you know, Gwen 2.0's, you know, successful publicity that got a lot of people signing up, but... It's not a perfect product, obviously. We see that.
Yeah.
And so,
it's just started. How can it possibly been, like, it can't be 100%. No. So, like...
It's stupid for this particular company to start selling a product which they know is faulty.
Yeah. Samsung.
just have so much to lose.
But, like, yeah. I mean, unless, again, we get some weird subplot with, like... Miss Cryer being, like, an AI or something, which would be super cool, but never have.
I,
like,
actually thought that was... That was part of my robot overlord theory.
Yeah.
Was that
yeah.
she was. Because I think she kind of talks that way. But, I mean, I get... I don't know. From my experience, it seems like indie films are less about, like, successfully changing the world and just navigating the current world of suck.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, like...
Again, all the ones I think of are very melancholy, and usually they're more kind of, like, early 20-something, because those are the people making indie films, so, like, of course, that's who their characters are going to be. So it's kind of nice to have, like, an older character, I guess. But, like, I don't... Yeah, I feel like a lot of them end on these feelings of, like, inevitability and sadness and melancholy. Like, I'm just thinking, like, 500 Days of Summer, Rocket Science, what else have I seen? Like, they're all just, like, they just kind of end on these downer notes, and, like, that's... okay, I guess, but, like, I just want something to happen, you know?
Yeah.
At least with, like, say, like, 500 Days of Summer, like, he learns at the end, like, well, like, there's, like, two ways of viewing 500 Days of Summer, right?
Yeah.
There's, like, the summer way of viewing things, and then there's a Joseph Gordon-Levitt way of viewing things, because I don't remember his character's name.
Yeah, I don't remember his name either.
Please, yeah.
Who does?
right? It's just, he's just Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But, you know, there's, like, the way of viewing it, like, oh, he's, like, learned from this, hopefully. Or maybe he hasn't, with that Autumn character who comes at the end. But, yeah. I don't know, there's just so much stuff that could have been turned into more. Like, the spinning meditation. Like, yeah. We finally find out what that's all about. But then, like, it could have, that could have tied into something. Like, I remember there was this short film done by Wong Fu Productions. And I used to follow them a lot when I was in, like, I guess early high school, late middle school. Mm-hmm. But they had this one short film. I can't remember the name of it. But, like, they had, you know, kind of indie-ish stuff happening with, like, they had a lot of spinning tops in one of their short films. But that was, like, symbolism related to something else, like relationships and spinning and blah. But, like, I don't know. Nothing really happened with the spinning meditation thing, you know? Yeah. And that was a thing that repeatedly occurred in the film. And I was like, this could tie to something larger, but yeah. It's not.
I thought the way that they were going to play that was that, like, there is no purpose to spinning. It just feels really good. And, like,
yeah,
that is how life should sort of be. Like, that's how things are.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were going for, but I feel like it could have been made more explicit.
I made that up. I mean,
but even that sounds good, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, just something. You can just put stuff in a film for the sake of putting something in the film, but it shouldn't be like that. There should be a purpose behind it.
Yeah.
Because, like, narratives and writing and stuff. Like,
those are all good reasons.
Yeah, I don't know. And then, okay, I cried a lot during the last half of the film. And it was definitely really sad during the Christmas scene, because you just, like, it just felt so final, you know? Like, you knew this was, like, her last time with her daughter. And so I cried during that one.
That was the most emotional scene, I think, for me. There's when they're celebrating Christmas and she's eating the entire pecan pie.
Yeah.
And I was like, like, there's something freeing about it that she isn't confined to her body anymore, I guess. But, like, it was so painful to watch. That was, I don't know, like, at that point, I thought, okay, so this is kind of painful. Like, it really hurts. And it's like,
like,
you have to know your value as a human and blah, blah, blah. This is going to continue getting more painful. And it kind of didn't. That was the height of pain for me. Everything from that was just downhill. Like, I stopped.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt as much after that.
I was just cold and numb. But, like, honestly, the drawings that she did of her mother was amazingly beautiful. Like, I want that print, man. I want it. It's so beautiful. And, like, that, I wanted more stuff like that, man. Like, that made that got me in the heart, dude. Like, that got me. But they're not selling that poster. They're selling a different poster for, like, $85 on their website, and I'm like, no. I want that drawing, and not for $85, okay, thanks. But yeah, I don't know, just, like, there's so much stuff going on, and, like, could have been explored so much more. Like, the women that were crying above and below their apartments, at least they're not on the street, number one.
Yeah.
But two, like, what was that all about? Like, that's really sad, and I liked how that tied in with, like, her hearing her mom cry.
That was really good. I liked that.
That was good. I wish we could have known more about the people living above and below them, but, you know.
We don't need to. It's just about how sad life is and everything sucks and we're all going to die. I'm just getting in character.
And then, like, I think one of the things I enjoyed visually was when she's being transferred to the new body, like, that weird waking up scene where, like, there's the hands in front and, like, red flashes.
That was trippy
and
scary. I did not like.
I liked it, though, because, of course, it's going to be horrifyingly, like, I don't know why the word discombobulating is coming to my head. That's not the word I want to use, because it's too humorous for this kind of situation. But, like, disorienting, I guess. Like, just, like, the horror of it disorienting, like, waking up in a body that's not really your own. And, like, you know, she, like, when she's waiting for her across the street and, like, looks at her hand. Like, I was like, ah.
Yeah.
But overall, like, I wasn't really crazy about Gwen 2.0's acting. Like, and maybe that's the point. Like, she's kind of like a shell of her former self, right? So
she's like that robotic, like all the other characters that felt really robotic.
when we thought they couldn't get more robotic, we got Gwen 2.0, right? Like, seriously.
I don't know. When they kind of had that waking up sequence, I initially thought, well, maybe, like, it is kind of like a cloning procedure in a way. So there'll be Gwen 2.0, but there'll also be Gwen 1.0. And I was like,
not anymore, she's dead. Gwen 1.0 is dead.
Well, I was thinking, well, what if she retains awareness, like, in her initial body? And, like,
I mean, that would have been cool, right?
Yeah, that
I would have lived if Gwen 1.0 just came out of nowhere, just came back. That would have been awesome, but, like, it just wasn't gonna happen.
Right, because they've created a twin, and essentially they're just duplicating all of her memories, like, through, like, brain stuff, you know?
And but it's not even her.
Right.
You know?
So it's not, you know, Gwen 2.0 isn't her. I don't see what the reason that you can't have Gwen 2.0 and Gwen 1.0 concurrently. Now, obviously, for their, like, product, it makes no sense. Because
that would have been a whole nother movie. I would have, that would have been interesting, actually.
There are all these little vehicles. There's little,
so many avenues and paths that could have been
exactly
taken.
I was exactly going to say the avenue. So, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. Like, this could have been something more, and it didn't really get to that level.
It didn't want to be. It knew.
Yeah, I guess it.
It knew what it wanted to be. It seemed like extremely clearly, and it was.
I think it could have been more.
I hope it could have been.
I think I just liked it in an exercise and like, again, aesthetics and like mood wise. I think it really hit its tone well, and it wasn't so depressing that I was just like, oh God, end it now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you mean. There are some problems with it that don't quite work. Would I recommend it to someone? I know you wouldn't, but like, would I recommend it to someone? I feel like certain people would really dig this film. Like, I feel like pretty much probably all of my cinema professors would probably enjoy it a lot. But then again, maybe they would point out too, like, that it's like, maybe it is too nebulous, you know?
I don't know.
Again, it's like, it's one of those, this is like an indie film thing. I think it feels very rough draft, but like, I think a lot of indie films feel really rough draft.
Yeah.
Usually those like are like more kind of, and the ones that I'm thinking of anyway are very much like young love stories, which are going to end tragically anyway, but that's a pretty set standard formula, you know. This is something different. This is more of like a family drama.
Yeah,
so it doesn't really have that base to rely on.
Yeah. I mean, I looked this film up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was interesting because not a lot of critics reviewed it, but the ones that did, it said 80% recommended it, right? And then they have the audience percentage of recommendation, right?
Yeah.
And that one is 65, which I think is very typical when you get these indie films. A lot of times the critics like it better than the general audience.
Sure.
But, like, you know, I was looking at all these different reviews and different websites after I finished, and a lot of people really liked it, and it seems like whether you liked it or you didn't care for it as much, you know, it really depends on what you look for in a film and where you find your satisfaction. I know we've talked about this a lot of times before, but
yeah,
that is what dictates how much you like a film or whether you even like it at all.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I like, I like it, but I totally get why someone would not like it.
See,
but it's also not my favorite, so it's like, I get it, you know?
No,
like,
okay. I
appreciate it for certain aspects, but other parts I'm like, yeah, I see what you're saying, you know? Like, it's not as compelling as it maybe could have been.
No, I completely agree, because, like, I don't like it, but I understand why people like it. Like, it does well, it absolutely does well. It's just one of those things, the things that it does aren't the top priorities for me to enjoy.
Your top priorities are, like, story and characters, right?
Hell yeah. So, like,
yeah,
that's what happens when, you know, I care about writing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was talking about how I didn't really like Independence Day at all. I mean, yeah. I guess, yeah, there was like a story and other stuff happening, but just like, I don't know, man. I mean, but you know, like, I've also made fun of like weird story, like Into the Badlands, classic example. Like, there's some pretty stuff going on there, but like,
it's not pretty enough to make you forget the horror of the
Quinn
plot.
How can anyone forget Quinn and his tumor? Like, oh boy. If you guys haven't checked out our Into the Badlands episodes, man, like,
you should.
We get pretty snarky. It's great.
It's funny because
this film was just very low-key, and like, even though I was like, yeah, I had kind of like a not super great week, it wasn't horrible, but like, I wanted something more later and humorous, and then, like, we were, you know, like, last minute trying to find something to watch, so then I was like, let's do Advantageous. I didn't come out of it feeling, like, worse than I went
I didn't either.
You know, like, it wasn't so devastating emotionally or anything. It's just, like, I don't know, sometimes, again, I feel like we don't watch, and again, this is more like conventional films, like, conventionally American films are not sad, right? So yeah. I think sometimes it's nice to get a different tone that's like not superhero saving the world or I don't know, super bombastic. Like I want a nice mellow, like sad kind of film, and that's a, like, nice time when, like, that's when you turn to your indie flick collection and go, what shall I watch today? So I don't know. It's just one of those, like, days where I'm like, I think that's one reason why I kind of put it off to later, because I was like, man, I don't really want to watch something sad. But then I was like, you know what? Go for it. So, yeah, I don't know. It really depends on what you look for in the film, I think. We've repeated this many a time. Yeah. But if, like, aesthetics and art and, like, I guess kind of mood or tone are what you're looking for, and in this case, it would be very, like, melancholy, kind of sad tone, like, it's there, you know, like, then this film, like, is probably something you'd enjoy.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for, like, super great, well, I don't think they did horrible with world building, but, like, you know, if you're looking for in-depth world building and characterization and stories, then, you know, maybe not,
maybe take a pass.
Yeah,
here's a question, which is
sure
on topic for the movie but off topic for what we're talking about. Did you feel any kind of anger towards, what were their names? Han and Lily, I believe. Essentially for driving Gwen to do the operation.
Well, they didn't know she was going to do the operation. I think it's kind of weirdly selfish for Gwen to just kind of think she can just say all this stuff now and it's gonna be okay. Like, I get why they were kind of hurt and taken aback, because, like, literally this revelation is coming out of nowhere for Lily, so it's like, let me dump this on you and then ask for your help, like, girl. But I know what you mean. Like, it's, you see the pain and frustration, and she's screaming outside because she has to go through with this.
I mean, but they were her last option, and you can see that, because that's, she, you know, she tries all these different things, and that's where she eventually ends up. And I guess the ironic thing is that if she had turned to them first, they would have gotten all this anger out of their system, and they would have given her, or, you know, they would have helped her out. But I don't know if
maybe,
that would have,
yeah.
They don't seem to have kind of the money to help her out the way she needs anyway.
Yeah, and then also, like, again, like, there's just so much time for Lily trying to get in contact with her, and it's like, sorry, really hard. Nothing ever came of it, and it was, like, really, it was too late, you know? And I was just like, it's sad and horrible.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, I mean, I get where the cousin comes. She's like, just drop this bomb on her, and it's gonna you're just expecting her to help you out. Like, it's kind of really strange. So, yeah. Did we ever get anything about her relationship with her dad, or nah?
Nothing.
No,
beyond
right.
The superficial thing with the conversation with the mother through the phone, because it seems like her parents kind of condemn her for, we don't know what.
Something to do with God, probably.
Well, I thought, okay, so in the beginning, I thought it was, oh, we don't know what it is. But by the end, I thought it was that she slept with her cousin's husband.
Oh.
I thought that was her sin. And so her father seems to be a preacher or something like that.
Because
they mention his sermons. And, like, where is religion in this film? That was touched on, you know, because he's a preacher, but we don't see it anywhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So many things were touched on but never further explored. And, like, sometimes that's okay. But you need to have a stronger, like,
base,
yeah. So, I don't know. I think it could have been more concise, the storytelling.
it's like a
it wasn't nothing. I mean, I guess you could say pacing. I guess some people might say that it dragged. I didn't think it dragged, but it was definitely slow paced. Okay, I think it was just slow paced, like real slow paced. Yeah, I don't know.
Because nothing
definitely passed the Bechdel test, right?
Yeah, definitely passed the Bechdel.
Multiple times,
many times. But yeah, I guess the reason it felt like it dragged for me is that nothing really happened.
Yeah.
And so even though it was, we were watching Gwen, you know, kind of like fight against her inevitable conclusion. We knew what the conclusion was, and it just, it all felt really futile.
That's why I wanted like a fight back moment, you know?
Fight the system. But then the thing is that she cannot fight back, right?
Right.
Because her, Gwen's sacrifice was that she does the surgery and makes Jules' life better. So if Gwen 2.0, you know, gets up there and it's like, this is the worst thing ever.
Fight the power. It's not going to
It doesn't resonate well because you're condemning Jules.
Yeah.
And the entire reason that she did the surgery in the first place. It's complicated, and I know real life is complicated, but I don't know. It just
but it's a movie, bro.
Yeah, it's a movie, bro. I did like how the relationship between Jules and Gwen was kind of twisted by the end. So, like, in the beginning, it's very much Gwen taking care of Jules, and, like, she cuts up an apple for her lunch and blah, blah, blah. And then by the end, it's Jules who is taking care of Gwen. You know, I think she tries to feed her an apple, and you know, she's the one who has to kind of keep reminding her about her shot, which is so creepy. Like, how do you keep forgetting about something that's almost killed you, like, a bajillion times?
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things where it's, like, so weird to see, like, their places reversed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, happy weekend, everyone! Like, this was a great movie to start. Well, I mean, this is going to be released, like, on Sunday, right? So
happy new week.
Enjoy the rest of your week, guys.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, happy Monday or Sunday or whatever. Whenever this thing gets put on the air, put online, whatever.
So,
I'm looking forward to a new podcast from, well, you know what podcast I'm talking about. But they update on Monday, so I'm just, like, waiting forward for that. But anyway, I totally went on a tangent there. Anything else, or... I think it's pretty much it for the movie.
I think that's about it for me. I don't know. Usually when I finish a film, I'm glad that I watched it, even if I don't like it. And so I guess I am glad I watched it. But I don't really know what I took away from it. I think it's just maybe cognitive dissonance that I don't want to admit that I just wasted an hour and a half. But I don't, like... Usually you can point to something that you took away from it. At least maybe, like, joy or humor or maybe it made you think. Or even, like, tragedies, like, sometimes it'll make you cry.
Like, the hard decisions women have to make for their families, I guess.
Okay.
Not feeling it?
No, I mean, I admit that that's an interpretation, but it didn't really kind of... No, it just didn't really resonate for me, personally.
Yeah.
But... That's okay. Not every film has to resonate for everybody. I'm not... A lot of people online seem to really, really dig this film. And so they can't all be wrong, right? Maybe it's me.
I just want... It's funny because, like, I did see an article saying that it finds hope in dystopia. And I was like, what hope are you talking about?
Did you watch the same film?
Right? Like, it's so fascinating how people have a completely different take on things.
Right. And it doesn't mean, like, it's one's more valid. It's just different.
Yeah. We should go find, like, purposefully bad films. Like really bad. Like, really, really, really bad.
That'd be a lot of fun, I think.
It'd just be, like, Riff-Trax or, like, Mystery Theater. Like, what is it? Mystery Theater 3000 or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
One of those things. All right. Well, I guess that's it for our show. We'll be back next week. Again, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Gmail. We're sfincolor@gmail.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, and please, please, please suggest more shows and films, because we are running out.
Yeah, we are running out.
And we'd love to continue doing
movies right now. So
yes, and we'd love to continue doing more.
Wonderful. Next week we'll be back with Sensei episode 9, I believe.
Woohoo!
That's exciting. I'm excited to continue.
Yes.
That. So.
All right.
That's all for me.
We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.